Hello and welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics Podcast. And I'm joined again by Michelle Summit.
Hello, hello.
I'm Ben Harlow, by the way. I forgot to introduce myself.
By now people should know, right?
Oh yeah, well, you should all know by now. My name is Ben. But yeah, coming up on this week's episode, we catch up with all things Diamond League. We also recap some crazy NCAA results and reflect on a fantastic multi-stars event in Talence. As well as that, this week's guests are junior track and field prodigy Tara Davis and high jump world number one Brandon Stark. So, let's kick things off with the Diamond League. It's been crazy in June, to be honest. It's been four meets in the month of June already. In fact, will there be five?
There will be, because we have another one coming up this week. We're actually on our way to Pre, which is not going to be in Eugene this year. We're on our way to Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the 30th, so that makes it five Diamond Leagues in June.
Wow, incredible. let's go back. Let's rewind a little bit and think back to some of the Diamond League results of the last few months, the last month. So starting in Stockholm, it was a rainy, cold start. I've never been so sad in a media tribune in my life. But yeah, Stockholm was still good. There was still some good highlights. Daniel Stahl did well. So did the Swede in the long jump as well.
Dinasha Smith, very mm-hmm. impressive in the 200 metres. I mean, I have to admit, I was happy that I was watching it from home.
Yeah, you picked the right
blanket.
One to sit out.
Don't worry, I was back for Rome. It was nice and sunny there.
Yeah, beautiful sunny Rome. That's why I was freezing in Stockholm. But yeah, Rome, however, yeah, the conditions were much more applicable to sprinting. We saw a fantastic head-to-head with Michael Norman and Noah Lyles. What was that like?
It was fantastic. I was actually taking over photography duties for that one because our resident Diamond League photographer Matt Quine was hit by a shot the week beforehand. Don't worry, it was just a junior shot. He was doing fine now, but we didn't want him running around like a lunatic, so I was standing by the finish line. And it was such a close one. They even gave the winner's flowers to Noah, and then Noah handed them over to Michael because he realised that actually Michael Norman had won. But fantastic time. I think it was like 1970, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So really fast.
Can we talk about Lyles' closing speed in the last 10 metres? My God, what on earth?
I have no idea how he does it. And I know that he's getting frustrated with his start, but at the same time, no need to worry. If you can close a race like this, even a 100-metre race as we've seen in Shanghai, that boy's got potential. And mm-hmm. It was funny after Rome, actually, he was saying, well, isn't it ironic that I won my not favoured event in Shanghai against Christian Coleman, and then I lose my favourite, like, yeah, the 200 against Michael. But it makes him exciting, and he's one of the guys that sees that as a positive because he knows that it pushes him. So I think the men's sprint is going to be very exciting for the rest of the season.
Yeah, it's been really exciting. And then going forward to Oslo, a slightly longer sprint, Carsten Warholm. Wow, that just seeing a Norwegian win set a European record in the men's 400 meter hurdles in front of a home crowd in Oslo. It was just incredible. He completely lit that stadium on fire.
It looked incredible, and the fact that it was a sellout crowd, the fact that they really promoted well, the organizers, they're always doing an amazing job, and he just likes what he is doing, and he's kind of celebrating in style, and the crowd kind of take to these things, and that's what makes Norwegian athletics so special at the moment.
Yeah, he's one of my favourite athletes on the circuit at the moment, I think. And as well as that, we saw Sydney McLaughlin's Diamond League debut over 400 hurdles as well.
Yeah.
She was nearly out of it after the first hurdle, nearly crashing over that one, but she managed to claw it back, and it was a really impressive debut because she beat an incredible field of really high-profile women.
And I think that's a thing. A lot of people were quite sceptical. What can she do on the big stage now? She showed that she was in decent shape when she ran the four flat in Shanghai. But I think there was a few kind of naysayers out there. They were like, oh, can she actually step it up? And for her to really deliver there, to run the race that she did, it was just really impressive. And I'm quite intrigued to see what else she can do as the season progresses.
And then, as well, looking forward, we had Rabat, and there was a bit of confusion with Frederick Dacres, who managed to... He had one of his throws go over the 70-metre line, and it was announced in the stadium, but then it got announced as a foul shortly after. So nobody really thought anything of it. But then he actually appealed the decision, and turns out It wasn't a foul, and he broke the Diamond League record in the men's discus.
I mean, 70-78 yeah. is quite something. And what I like about him is just the way that he looks and the way that he throws. He really throws with speed more than anything. And I guess maybe that's his Jamaican genes kind of coming through there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's someone who said that when he was little, he was always like shy, and it took a long time to grow. And now you see this massive guy there.
And he is legitimately massive. He is so tall.
I was going to say, not massive in terms of mass, but like pure height alone.
Yeah.
And I'm no physics expert or anything, and my physics teacher will agree with that. But I would just love to see kind of a biomechanical analysis of his throws, because I bet it'd be fascinating comparing him to the more sturdier guys, the David Stalls, obviously, he's had Daniel Stalls, who's had a really good season.
Yeah, he's equally had an incredible season. What a head-to-head we've got building for Doha.
So I'm quite intrigued to see how we have those different types of throwers going head-to-head against each other as the season progresses.
Looking forward, though, so we are on our way to Prefontaine. It's my first time going. You've been before to, well, you actually went to the OG Hayward Field, but we are in Stanford this year, and there's a lot of exciting lineups.
Yes, and you know what? I think it's actually refreshing to be somewhere else. I mean, I last year we were all very sentimental when we said goodbye to the old Hayward and said goodbye to the stands and everything, but Stanford has a good heritage, especially in the distances. They always have good meets there. I haven't seen or haven't looked much at the plans for the stadium and everything yet, but I think people will like the fact that it's moving around to somewhere else this year. And I, like you said, the fields look very, very impressive. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to try somewhere else. And then we have obviously got the World Championships coming up in Oregon 21. So hopefully I can see the stadium then, the new one anyway. But yeah, in terms of lineups, one for me is the women's 1500 meters. It's really exciting. You've got Faith Kipyegon returning after pregnancy. We've got Shelby Houlihan and Laura Muir. What a scintillating lineup.
Shelby for me is really the one to watch in that race. And no, mm-hmm. Laura's been incredible, and I know that there's a lot of other stellar athletes, but Shelby just has this incredible kick. I will never forget her in Lausanne last year. It was incredible. And I think for her, I know that the Bowerman babes have been on altitude training all together, and there's a whole bunch of that group all racing across various events at Pre, but Shelby really is an extraordinary athlete, and I am excited to see what she can do. Like I said, she hasn't raced much this season yet. A lot of Americans have kind of been pushing their season back with Worlds being so late. So, well, intrigued to see what Jerry made them do over the winter and the early summer.
We've also got a matchup. We've got Elaine Thompson and Dina. Obviously, Elaine's been doing her own thing in Jamaica, but then Dina's also been running really well on the circuit. So it'll be interesting to see how they go up against each other as well. As well as that, we've got Sha'Carri Richardson making her Diamond League debut in the women's 100 metres, which is pretty exciting.
I was just about to say, because for me, that really, I mean, I don't think it's a scoring event, the women's 100, yes, but her race from NCAAs, absolutely blown it out of the park.
Uh-huh.
2 world under 20 records for her. 10.75.
That is just
raised her arms. And that, I mean, you mentioned Elaine running the 200, but Shelley and Fraser Price is in the 100, and her and Elaine at the Jamaican Trials
both ran a world lead.
Both ran a world lead, just bettering that 10.75 to 10.73.
Mm-hmm.
That field in general is incredible. We have Marie-Josée Talou in there. We have Aaliyah Hopps, who's been running really well. Maria Lahore, Michelle Yahi, I mean, English Gardener, the list goes on.
And that's not even a Diamond League event. This is crazy. So yeah, it's going to be great to see her competing. But let's talk about the NCAAs for a minute, because, I mean, we know every year they bring out these brilliant performances, but this year was just particularly special.
I just felt like, I mean, in the past, quite often, I would have stayed up and watched some of it. And this year, it was just after an intense few weeks of travelling, and it just came kind of started as the Rome Diamond League was happening. And we were watching the first parts of it when there was the qualifying, and Mondo not winning in the cobbled.
And he's the guy who beat him, Chris Nielsen.
Nielsen, yeah.
He's going to be at Prefontaine as well, exactly. Making his Diamond League debut.
So there's been some upsets as well, but I think what you're saying there is right. It was just when the weekend happened and the finals on the track were taking place, and waking up in Europe the next morning to those results. You needed a very strong coffee to kind of digest that stuff.
And a brown paper bag.
Breathe calmly. No, but the sprints in particular, like you said, Shikari Richardson, absolutely incredible. I mean, the women's 200, she didn't even win. Lost out on the win by a couple of thousands.
Really? I thought she won. Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But it was still a world under 20 record because the girl beat her. And then, obviously, on the men's side, Mr. Divine Odadoro, who we've been following for years.
A deadly day.
It was a deadly day, indeed, at NCAAs. Well, that was difficult to say.
Tongue twister.
But it absolutely fantastic, and he's been on such a roll. And I'm just so excited to see what he can do, because he's just such a talented athlete, such a... like phenomenal person to watch, always like very upbeat, very lighthearted, and I'm just excited to see where he can go.
Yeah, and also honourable mentions to Grant Holloway, who again is just like an NCAA stalwart, 12.98 in the men's hurdles, incredible.
Well, and you mention him, obviously he's just announced that he's turned pro, mm-hmm. as well as Daniel Roberts, who finished second, mm-hmm. and Daniel Roberts is actually racing at Pre as well. So we've got a whole bunch of these NCAA athletes. Ali Ostrander, we were just talking about her, in the women's steeple. Also impressive run from her. You mentioned she had a really funny post-race interview.
Shout out to her. Yeah, I think she was just said, I'm really hot. Not in the attractive way. I'm just really, really hot.
But actually, on the back of that, something that I really like was the fact that she was made a bit of a stand on social media and talked about the way... TV commentators talk about athletes and athletes' bodies and their appearance rather than focusing on the performances. And she's someone who's been really, really consistent for quite a while on the NCAA scene. And again, the way that commentators refer to her and the way that they talk about her appearance, she just pointed it out, just point blank. And I think that's something that requires some strength, especially when you're starting out in your career. Mm-hmm. And I really like the fact that she spoke up about it. And there was a bunch of other athletes from the NCAA that followed up from that. So props to her for that.
That's Spike's feature waiting to happen. I can hear it already.
I'm just typing right now.
Well, speaking of inspiring, talented youngsters, I think this is a perfect segue to go to my chat with Tara Davis. Welcome to the Adelaide podcast, Tara Davis.
Hello.
So, your name is pronounced Tara.
Yes, Tara.
Is it Americans that have a problem with it?
Yeah, all the Americans say Tara, and then I realize all the Europeans and other people that aren't from America say Tara. So, I think it's odd, but I like coming to the European countries because they pronounce my name right.
Is it, you grew up in LA then?
I grew up in Texas.
Texas,
and
okay.
Then moved to California when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then did that and then went to Georgia for college.
Okay, so how was growing up for you? Were you always really sporty?
Yes, so my family is very athletic. My brothers and sisters were always in sports in high school and in middle school. So when my second youngest sister, she was into track, and my dad started a track team back in Texas, and she was doing long jump, and I wanted to do long jump. So at the age of 4, I started jumping.
Four.
Yeah.
Wow.
Really young.
So do you say your parents were both into track as well?
Yeah, my mom was not. She was a band player and a cheerleading coach, but my dad was football and baseball and track and all the sports.
Would you say you're quite creative and musical yourself?
Not really. I mean, I listen to a lot of music, but I don't play an instrument. I don't
Okay.
sing, so.
You are quite creative in terms of you have a YouTube
I
channel.
do. I do have
Yeah.
a YouTube channel.
And you've actually, I mean, it's been pretty successful.
Yeah,
And you've only been doing
surprisingly.
it for around a year.
Yeah, so in November it hit a year. So we made a lot of content,
Yeah.
a lot of subscribers within a year, and hopefully it can keep growing.
So what made you decide to do a YouTube channel?
I'm not sure. Hunter and I have gotten like a lot of requests to start a YouTube channel. We weren't really sure at first. And then we were like, okay, let's just do it. Let's see what it's like. And then for some reason, like people really enjoyed it. And we first weren't posting as regularly, just because we weren't together and we were just at different schools. And once we started posting regularly, people were like, oh my God, like this is so cool. And we started getting noticed and started getting like a bunch of followers from it. And we're like, okay, let's keep it going.
So for clarification, Hunter is your boyfriend.
Yes.
Yeah. How did you guys meet?
We met at Simplot Games in 2017.
2017.
Yeah.
Whereabouts is that?
It's in Idaho,
Okay.
Pocatello, Idaho. And I saw him and I kind of just like randomly gave him a hug after he raced. And
Had
we
you never
just
spoken to him
never talked
before?
to him ever. And I don't know why I did. I think I just saw how like really inspirational he was to like the kids around him and the other competitors. And I just like just randomly gave him a hug, and then it kind of just started from there.
Have you always been like that, hugging random people?
Nah, not hugging random, talking to random people, not hugging. No.
Okay, so when you were growing up in Texas, when did you first realize, or in California, when did you first realize that track and field could be an actual thing for you?
It's probably when I started competing at my age division, and then also competing at the next age level up and still winning.
So you did under-18s in the under-18 World Championships in Cali.
Yes.
What was that, your first international
That was my
competition?
first world travel, first passport stamp, everything.
Really?
Yep.
So how did you find that then?
It was really cool.
How old were you?
15 or
That's
16. I was
crazy.
16.
16.
Yeah, so I was kind of the older side, but then again, I was still young. But it was really cool, and like that really showed me I want to do this for the rest of my life. I want to become a pro athlete.
Yeah. And how do you find the experience of being in a different country?
Oh, it's cool.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather travel the world than stay in America and stay at home and compete. I love to travel. I love seeing new things, eating new things, being around just like the different cultures. It's really fun.
So talk me through Cali then. How did you do in your event?
I did long jump and triple jump.
So you did triple jump? I knew
Yeah.
you did hurdles and long jump quite a lot.
Yeah.
You triple
I
jump.
used to triple jump. I don't triple jump as much anymore just because it's just a really technical event and it was supposed to be a fun event originally. And then it started like getting to the technical part because I have the speed and I have the jumps, but it was just very technical, and I didn't have like the right coach. My dad didn't know much of triple jump,
Yeah.
so we were kind of like, okay, just like make this a fun event. And so I did triple jump and long jump in Cali. I made it to the finals in triple jump and ended up getting like ninth place or something.
Okay.
And I was upset, but I wasn't upset because it was my fun event, and I don't know how I made it to a world championships
Yeah.
and a fun event. And then in long jump, I knew I had a chance to win, but it was very slim and I hadn't peaked yet. And I was just going with the flow, just out there having fun. And I popped off I think like a 6:24 or something like that. And I was like,
Okay.
oh my gosh, like I think I could win. Cause I think that I was sitting in like fourth place and it bumped me up to second place. And I was like, all right, I'm just gonna go all out, have fun. And I hit 21 feet, I think it's like 6:26 or something like
Okay,
that.
yeah, you in America, you all
But
work
yeah,
in
we
feet,
always do
yeah.
feet. So it was really fun and to be able to like experience the whole Europe, the not European, but like the international crowd. It's way different than American crowds because they actually join in and like clap for you
Yeah.
and they pay attention. And I'm like, wow, this
Yeah,
is Cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So did you end up winning? Right?
I ended up winning that. Yeah.
So coming away from that, what were you think? Were you like, this is it now? This is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that was just basically my whole entire vibe. Just once I got there and I got to be with other athletes who were elite as me,
mm-hmm.
and we all had things in common. I met my best friend on that trip, and we were all so young that we still were like relying on our parents, like, for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could still see everyone like looking for their parents, talking to parents every night. And I just compare that to the last world trip I was on, the Finland trip, how like even for me, I didn't rely on my parents that much. And it was all a bunch of either college or going to college.
Yeah.
And it's just like growing up, mm-hmm. I guess. And it was really cool.
So would you still consider yourself a hurdler and a long jumper?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I mean, last year you were really successful in both. So you broke the junior world record.
Yeah, in the 60-meter hurdles.
Did you expect that to happen?
Nope.
No?
Did not expect that. I did want to hit 7, but I didn't know there was a world record involved once you hit 7.
Mm-hmm.
So I hit that once, and hopefully I can break that time again. I can't break the record again, but break the time.
Yeah, that's, I mean, in the US,
mm-hmm.
the women's hurdles is crazy. Their standard is super high. So for you, and well, even long jump as well, like, mm-hmm. you're in some of the most competitive events for US women. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of great athletes. Do they inspire you a lot?
They really do. I've actually become friends with most of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool. But from watching them on TV and then seeing them at a track meet, like from the stands point of view, and then actually competing with them, it's just wild. Like, I'm surprised that I can even do that.
Mm-hmm.
But they inspire me a lot. They have done the things that I've wanted to do. And I always ask them for advice and ask them what's the best tips to overcome this situation. And they're really supportive.
Yeah. How did you find from just being at home to getting to college, that transition period? Do you feel like, are you training like a full-time athlete now, or do you think after college is going, you'll take it that step further?
I feel like I can take a step forward just because I'm battling with school and
of course,
athletics. But the transition was very difficult because I'm a homebody. I love my parents. I love my family. And for them to be miles, a 5-hour flight away, when I get sick, I just can't. Like, come home and cuddle my mom.
I know the feeling.
Yeah. So, that was difficult, but, I mean, it's part of growing up, so mm-hmm. I'm glad I can do it.
Yeah, and this is, so you'll have one more year after this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, a year and a half.
Halfway there.
Yeah.
Ugh. Is the plan to move back to California then, afterwards?
I think I want to move back to Texas.
Okay.
Yeah, so, my dad lives there, and hopefully I can get my mom to come back. So I want to live there. It's closer to all my family.
Okay.
All family lives in Texas, so, and it's cheaper than California.
So before you left for Georgia, obviously, mm-hmm. you had met Hunter mm-hmm. as well. Where is he at university?
He's at University of Arkansas, mm-hmm. so he's still in the SEC, which is where Georgia's division is. So we see each other a lot at meets. We also see each other whenever we want, basically.
Yeah.
He's
a successful athlete as well.
So, I mean, once season starts, we mm-hmm. don't really see each other as much unless it's at meets. So
that's really weird, isn't it? Cool. He's a Paralympic medalist.
Mm-hmm.
What did he get medals in?
The 400 and 200.
Wow.
And kind of the 4x1.
Kind of?
They won the 4x1 and then they got disqualified.
Oh, no.
So,
these things happen. It's 4x1.
Yeah. 4x1's very hard to medal in if your team is up in the air, I guess. But, he's very successful. He went to Rio. He went to Worlds. And he went to a lot of Worlds. I think he went to Doha, I think, or Dubai or something like that.
Yeah.
And then he went to London in 2017.
So, how old is he as well?
He's my age. He's 19.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
So, we're both really young, but mm-hmm. we have a big goal.
Yeah.
Huge goals.
What are the goals for you two?
Going to the Olympics, of course, mm-hmm. and then just having our YouTube just skyrocket and see where that can take us. We've had a lot of information that we've learned from YouTube, and we've gotten a lot of, like, we have friends who are in the YouTube community, and they're like, okay, you can do this to do this. So if you do this thing, you'll go here. If you do this, you won't go here. So we're trying to follow in a couple of people's footsteps who have like millions of subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten a lot of promotion deals, but we can't do them yet.
Is it because you're both at college?
Yeah. So NCAA doesn't allow us to like make money off of other people. We can't make money off of ourselves.
Right.
But, you know, it's a learning process, and hopefully once we're out of college, we can start making the big brand deals.
So is that something you're thinking about? Will you turn pro early? Is that something you've thought about before?
Yeah, so I really wanted to turn pro early after my first year. I've always been like that whole one and done type of thing,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't end up that way. And so hopefully after this year, I can turn pro and start like my whole life, mm-hmm. I guess, a little bit earlier than usual. But yeah, so if we're able to both go pro, I think we'll locate in Texas and train in Texas and to start our lives in Texas.
Any group specifically in Texas?
Not necessarily. I have some people I've like yeah. know, and my dad also. Hopefully, he could be my coach again.
So did he coach you growing up?
Mm-hmm. He's oh, coached okay. me ever since I was 4, and then all the way up until high school, my senior year.
Oh wow!
Mm-hmm.
What a story that'd be.
Yeah. So I would like to go back to my dad.
So with your YouTube as well, when I was doing research on you, I got deep into your channel. I was watching that the video of you doing the eating the jelly bean
oh,
thing.
Oh goodness! Don't ever do that.
I mean, yeah, it looked interesting. And then the video, the proposal video.
Oh my god!
Literally, it was brilliant. So just explain to the listeners what happened with that.
Okay, which one? The proposal video.
Yeah.
Okay, so the proposal video was basically all Hunter's idea. He's like telling me, okay, I'm gonna get a cardboard cutout for you for a video, and I thought it was gonna be a video for me and him to do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he had his own route, his own plans. He's like, I'm gonna fake propose to you. And I was so against it, but I was like, you know what, just do you, do whatever you want to do. And he didn't really tell me any details about it. He mm-hmm. just said, wait for the video to come out. And he got done filming everything, and he sent me a picture of him, like, on one knee, and me, like, facing, or, like, we're just like this. And I'm like, that looks so real. He even edited, like, a shadow mm-hmm. of me, like, in, like, the shadow area, and I'm like, these people are gonna go nuts about this. And sure they did, and there was a lot of mixed emotions about it.
Did your family know?
My mom, dad did not know.
Now did that go down?
I didn't really want to tell them. I kind of wanted to prank them also, but my mom had a mixed feeling. She texted Hunter a long paragraph. But it was a funny paragraph. It wasn't like anything bad, but his dad didn't like the video. His mom liked it. But the people who were watching, a lot of people thought it was funny. A lot of people thought, why would they prank us like that?
Mm-hmm.
But overall, we had like a good reaction for yeah. it. Now they really want a proposal video. Like, not yet.
I mean, it's all just a bit of fun, mm-hmm. I guess. So where can people find your channel, by the way?
If you go on YouTube, it's just Tara and Hunter Videos, and we should be the first people to pop up.
Cool. And so you recently hit 100,000 subscribers
yes.
as well. So
yeah.
tell me about that.
That was a huge marking in like our YouTube history.
In a year as well.
Yeah. So when we started our YouTube channel, we would post about once a month
mm-hmm.
because that's all the time we had to make a YouTube video whenever we'd see each other. And then we became kind of like pretty dedicated, like once we see each other, we'll make like 2 or 3 videos so
mm-hmm.
they would last us until
yeah.
we see each other next. And as we did that, that's how we realized we would grow followers. And I remember in the summer we reached 80K
mm-hmm.
and then in November we reached 100K. So to think like in August or something, in 2 months we gained 20,000 followers on YouTube, like that's huge.
Yeah.
And if we continue to grow like that, then
exponentially, yeah.
I don't know where we will be.
Wow, it's impressive. So what's the future looking like for you then? Are you with Doha around the corner?
Mm-hmm.
Is that in your plans?
That's
you think?
Hopefully in my plans. Hopefully I won't be burnt out from college season.
I mean, it's always really difficult for you guys in the US because your college season is brutal. Mm-hmm. It starts pretty much from January, indoors all the way through. So
So we started training in late August, mm-hmm. early September. I've been putting all the hard work in so I can compete for indoor, have a peak in indoor, have a peak in outdoor, mm-hmm. and then hopefully peak again. So three peaks in one season is a lot, but I wouldn't, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to get, I guess there's the US champs as well. So mm-hmm. that kind of comes around the end of the college season, yeah?
Yeah, so that comes after nationals, which is like our big hoorah of track and field in college. That's where like all the really pro college athletes mm-hmm. go to after nationals. So hopefully I can perform well enough to get me to Doha from there.
So as well, obviously there's Doha on the horizon, but you still had a great year last year. So you started off with that mm-hmm. world indoor record and then you knew that there was the world under 20s. Mm-hmm. How did the year pan out for you heading into the world under 20s?
Well, I didn't have the best year. I mean, I had an okay year. For hurdles outdoor, I didn't hit 12 seconds, which I wanted to. I only hit like 13.08. But for long jump, I hit 22 once, and that was pretty satisfying. I wish I'd done it a little earlier. 670, I think. 670. Yeah.
Okay.
So hopefully I can, you know, hit that a little bit earlier this year. Mm-hmm. I think I can. I hit 660 from a 12-step at practice.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, so That's good. Huge things are coming from that.
What's your normal run-up length?
18.
18, okay.
Yeah, so from a 12-step approach, I'm not in all my full... I'm not in full speed. To me, I'm, like, chopping my step just so I can get to the board and be on the board. Mm-hmm. So for a 660 indoor, I don't know what I can do, like, if I continue my training.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really exciting time for you anyway, mm-hmm. as a young athlete. So you said that it was kind of okay, so you hit the 22 foot mm-hmm. jump.
I hit 22 at our Worlds, or Nationals, to get me to Juniors. I didn't compete as well as I wanted to at Juniors. I think I hit, like, 6:36, I think.
Yeah.
Which... I mean, yes, I was upset, but then I came to realize, like, it was one meet. Like, it's okay.
And also, again, it's at the end of a very mm-hmm. long season for you guys. I mean, going all the way to Finland, which is completely different to Colombia, for example. Yeah. Was that your first time competing in Europe?
Mm-hmm. It's my first time in Europe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I realized that European food is completely different mm-hmm. from American food. So, that was probably one of the lows about it, because every breakfast I was eating some like cucumbers because their eggs weren't the same as American eggs. So I think traveling now, mm-hmm. I have to come to realization, like, try the food. If you don't like it, you can always look at like anything else, bring snacks, bring some like beef jerky or something that keep your like protein up.
Yeah.
So I think that was part of the reason why I didn't compete as well as I wanted to.
Yeah.
So
that's what the juniors are for, though.
Yeah.
You know, you can make those mistakes mm-hmm. and then learn from them and that kind of thing. Even for me, like, I'm from Britain, and Finland, the food there is completely different to anything I've been used to. I remember on the flight there, they gave out snacks, and it was a reindeer wrap.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, I was like, reindeer?
Yeah.
Like, you want me to eat some... That's Santa's best friend? No.
But yeah, I mean, Tampere, it was still it was a really fantastic championships anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you still came away with a medal, though.
Yes, I still got bronze. I mean, I'm thankful mm-hmm. to even be there. Yes, I would like to have competed better, but I was still there.
Yeah.
And some of the athletes I was competing with wanted to be there so badly.
Yeah.
And so I had to just take those things into consideration that I still made it.
Mm-hmm. So did you vlog that trip at all?
I did a little bit, but I didn't have this camera. I had a GoPro, which was very hard to vlog with.
Yeah.
So I basically just posted a lot of stuff on my Instagram story mm-hmm. to show everyone.
Okay, cool. Well, best of luck for all of next year. And yeah, thank you for sitting down and chatting.
Of course, it was fun.
Okay, so still hot on everybody's minds, Talence was a really a roller coaster ride, I think is probably the best way to describe it. Nafi Tiam, what an incredible athlete, but just also so devastating as well. Like,
the thing with her is just like she's got such a strong mind. I don't know how anyone who competes in multi-events manages to power through those days anyway, but to do it the way that she does it, who delivers when it matters. She will jump PBs in the high jump. I think, did she jump
202? Like, that's mind-blowing. 202. I mean, Maria Lasatskini, she's now jumped 206, which is brilliant as well in itself, but 202 as a multi-eventer, that would win you a medal at pretty much every World Championships or Olympics.
So for her to have the first day that she did in Talence, 4,133 points, and then go on, got injured during the javelin, and then still ran the 800, and still scored 6,819, just roughly a world, like just over a world lead.
Mm-hmm.
To do that,
yeah,
is just mind-boggling, and I think at the same time, it also slightly worries me seeing her injured, because I don't know where that leaves us as the season progresses. I'm sure she was being cautious about it and just didn't want to risk too much. But there is just so much that can happen in a multi-events, and that's quite unpredictable. And we were all looking at Talence for Kevin Mayer to compete. And then he got injured in the long jump and actually just did a couple of events here and there. I think in the end he did five or six.
Five, I think,
So that's also, again, he's just such a dominant figure in this sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that we'll see him come back to strength, do a few individual meets here and there. I'm sure we'll see him at the likes of the Paris Diamond League. Yeah, they normally bring him out. So we can see both of those top athletes in top shape come Doha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was also the rise of Pierce Lepage as well. You know a lot more about him than I do, Michelle, so go for it. Take it away.
No, I just remember him from a few years back. He actually won did very well in Talence 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Bearing in mind he's only 23 now.
Yeah.
He was super young back then. Young Canadian guy. He won Commonwealth silver last year on the Gold Coast. And just for a nation that has kind of been, in terms of multi-events, been riding on the Brian Tyson-Eaton and the Damien Warner wave for a long time, it's really exciting to see someone like him come through. I think if you look at him kind of, he's very tall, build-wise. There's still a lot of room for improvement in terms of working on strength here and there. So for him to come out there to perform the way that he did, I mean, he scored 8,453 points. That's almost
solid.
300 points over his PB beforehand.
Wow.
So to do that in a World Championship year, to compete against the likes of Mayer, although obviously he wasn't finishing that one, but I also have to give a special shout out to Thomas van der Pletsen, because if you don't follow him on social media, on Instagram in particular, you have to, because he is phenomenal at telling the story of the decathlon over the course of those several days. And he's made these amazing animations, and I think he had it all planned out a few months back when he was in South Africa on a training camp, and he wanted to compete at the South African Championships as a
guest.
And he started off, had really a couple of great events, and then there was a power cut in the stadium.
I remember that. And
for hours they were kind of debating whether they could still get it rolling, but there normally has to be X amount of time between events for the decathlon still to be valid. And in the end they had to abandon the decathlon after the first day. And so for him that was a very important one, because he wanted to score the world qualifier. So then he had to go back to the scoring board and say, okay, right, back to the drawing board, I think is the
drawing action. Board, yeah.
I'm foreign, sorry. had to go back and decide, what am I going to do? So he went to Talence and did the whole thing again, and I don't want to give too much away, but he's done an amazing job on his Instagram at telling the story of his decathlon. Very great animations and stuff. So
basically go to his Instagram now.
Now Pause the podcast right here. Go and then come back.
We will allow you to exit the podcast to just look at these things and then obviously come back again.
Do you just want to put like some pausing music in up?
Like elevator waiting. Yeah. Oh no, when you're hold the line, please.
Oh yeah. In the background, you can hear some sirens. So that's just okay. Sorry, we'll go back to athletics now.
Yeah. Anyways, so every episode on the podcast, we like to briefly go through some of the highlights of what's been going on in the wonderful world of athletics. So just in case we don't have time to talk about all of them, I'm just going to recap them now for you all. So Elaine Thompson completes an incredible sprint double at the Jamaican Championships, setting two world leads of 10.73 over 122 dead over 200 metres. Carsten Voorhoorn breaks the European record in the men's 400 metre hurdles, running an incredible 47.33. High jumpers Bondarenko and Barshim began their comeback as they made their return from injury. Brianna Williams breaks the world under 18 record over 100 metres, running 10.94 at the Jamaican Championships. Maria Lasatskini jumps an incredible high jump world lead of 2.06. And finally, the IAAF announce a new name and logo as they begin their transition to world athletics. That's like a lot of a mouthful to say all of those things, but we're at
well
the other
done,
side.
Benjamin. Well done.
I was basically waiting for the round of applause, but it's okay.
We'll get you an ice cream in a minute.
I will take an ice cream as an apology. Okay, so time for our final guest. He is the current high jump world number one, the Commonwealth champion, and the Diamond League champion, Brandon Stark. So enjoy. So whereabouts in Australia are you from?
Sydney.
Sydney, okay.
Yep, my whole life.
Your whole life. What was it like growing up in Sydney?
Different to what it is now. Yeah, it's changed quite a bit. It's very populated now. A lot of traffic. But it's still all right. It's still home. Not sure if I'll live there my whole life, but for now it's where home is.
What way has it changed? So was it a lot more?
Well, just a lot more people, and I'm more of a more kind of relaxed, quiet guy. So, you know, if you're going to the shops or something, there's just a lot of people.
Yeah.
Driving from training to home, there's just a lot of people on the road. So, I know like Queensland's a little bit different, and it's warm. So,
yeah.
Who knows? We might end up there. I don't know. That's way down the
way
down
in the future.
Line. Yep.
Is this like post athletics?
Athletic. I don't think I won't move at all during my career. Like, my coach is there.
Yeah.
My family's there, so.
Who is your coach?
Alex Stewart.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
How long have you guys been together?
9 years.
9 years,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, he's my first coach.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I started with him when I was 15.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's been kind of going up since then.
Cool. So, obviously growing up in Australia, you're a huge sporting nation. Have you always been sporty?
Yeah. Like, obviously, our family is a bit sporty.
I wanted to ask you about that. So, your brother is a cricketer.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. How did that happen?
Well, yeah. So as a family, we did most sports. We all did little athletics. We all played soccer or football, however you want to call it. I played cricket, same with Mitchell. Sisters played netball. They played soccer as well.
How many of you were there?
So, when I grew up, it was two sisters and Mitchell.
Oh, okay.
So, Amanda and Taylor, yeah. They're, so, 20... Oh, how about we don't even go with ages? there's an older sister and a younger sister, and then Mitchell's obviously older. But, yeah, we were all sporty, like, the whole time. Parents didn't push it. I think they obviously encouraged it, being active as kids, but I think we all enjoyed it.
Are your sisters athletes?
No, not anymore. They obviously still stay active, but older sister's interior design and younger sister just finished a master's in marine biology.
Wow.
They're the academic side and we're the sporting side.
So when did your brother first become successful?
He did the, I guess, underage Australian teams. I think he went to under-19s Australian. And then kind of just your natural progression.
Yeah.
You know, play for state and then get noticed and then picked up to play for Australia. So,
I mean, you had some success as a junior athlete. You went to the World Juniors in 2012.
Yeah.
Barcelona. Was that your first international competition?
No.
No.
2010, the first Youth Olympics.
Oh, okay. Was that
Singapore?
Singapore. Oh, yeah. Wow. How was that then?
Yeah, that was my first time going outside of Australia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Could have been the first time I was on a plane.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was different.
Yeah.
Singapore, humid as, but it was good. Like, I guess doing well there mm-hmm. kind of made the whole experience nice.
Yeah.
I got a silver medal, so. And okay. I was on countback too, so, which is a bit annoying, but, yeah, it was really good. And that kind of kick-started everything, really.
How old were you then?
16.
16.
That's November.
Oh, okay.
And it was in August, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, at that point, did you think in your head, oh, maybe high jumping athletics is something that I could do?
Yeah, before it, obviously, you know, you were trying. And
yeah.
You were training towards it. But there was just something that wasn't quite, you know, set for me to look at it like, oh, this can be a career. Mm-hmm. But getting the silver medal at an international competition, that was like, all right, we can do something here.
Yeah.
That kind of kick-started it, you know.
Yeah.
We went to Germany the next year, then Barcelona.
Yeah.
Made Moscow. Yeah, then.
And how did you find them competing at the World Juniors?
Well, I didn't jump to my potential.
Yeah.
Didn't jump how I wanted to, didn't jump as high as I wanted to. So it was a little bit disappointing, but you know, sixth at World Juniors, you know, it's nothing to be sneezed at, but it is World Juniors.
Yeah.
It is what it is, you know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how athletes kind of peak and, or some athletes who maybe aren't as amazing as juniors
yeah.
end up being the most fantastic seniors.
Yeah, yeah.
And vice versa, like you hear about these amazing juniors who just completely disappear off the face of the
yeah.
earth.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think you're the latter. I mean, you've had an amazing
yeah.
season this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've really, I mean, you came onto my radar specifically this year.
Yeah,
like a bang at the Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
Do you think, was this a long, so between now and then, obviously you went to Moscow. How was that?
Moscow?
Being at a world champ, senior yeah. world champs.
Well, that was my first senior. I was 19 at the time.
Yeah.
PB was 228. It was quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I thought I was ready and I thought I knew what to expect.
Yeah.
But it's a totally different ball game going from juniors to seniors. You know, you start at 217 when that was like towards the end of the competition usually.
Mm-hmm.
So I cleared one height and that was it. I think it was good good to experience that and do that at that comp. Kind of, I guess, maybe a bit of an eye-opener to, you know, everything's not going to come easy and you're not going to just go from here to here that easy or that
mm-hmm.
quick. Which it didn't from then on. It was very gradual.
Yeah.
To this season, really.
Yeah. So did you do the Commonwealth Games?
Glasgow. Yeah.
Glasgow.
Yeah, I came eighth. I think jumped 21.
So again, still finding your feet.
Yeah. Like that season changed run up a little bit. Had a little bit of ankle issue, and then from then it kind of started a little bit, you know, step up a little bit more.
Yeah.
For Beijing, yeah.
Yeah, well, making the final,
yeah.
that was a great. I mean, and
31.
21.
Yeah. And jumped 231 for PB.
Yeah.
To, I think it was equal first, maybe, to qualify for the final.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was huge, you know, world champs finalist. You know, throughout the years, the ankle kind of got worse.
Right.
And I couldn't really back up, which was evident in Beijing as well as Rio. You know, I jumped 31 in Beijing. And 29 in qualifying for Rio, but the finals were 25 in Beijing and 20 in Rio. So
right.
the ankle always had was a bit. How are you going? To kind of back up only a day in between.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had surgery after Rio, and then kind of now we're here, sort of thing. Yeah.
Is an ankle injury typical in high jump?
Can be. Some don't get it at all. Just because of the impact on takeoff.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading, you know, Gianmarco Tamberi.
Yeah.
So when
good
he,
friends with him now, actually.
Are you?
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, well, when he was, he set that huge personal best, and then he was going. He went for the world record, didn't he?
Oh, he jumped. I think he tried 41.
41, and
yeah.
then that was how he injured himself. And I had no idea that you can literally, because you're pushing your body so hard, you're literally smacking your foot into the floor, right?
Yeah.
What's that like to?
see, it, quite painful, but when you get it fixed, mm-hmm. seasons like this season can happen. So, yeah. We thought after Rio was the best time to do it. It was
so you had an operation, yeah.
Yep. Got a bone spur removed out of the front of the ankle,
mm-hmm.
about the size of like my thumbnail, mm-hmm. like, quite big. And there was a floating bone around in there as well.
Oh my God.
Bit of a cleanup. Still got a bone spur in the back, but that's not an issue at the moment. So I did that after Rio because we thought that was the best time to do it leading up to Comm Games,
because mm-hmm.
that was more important than London World Champs, because it's home Comm Games, you yeah. want to do well. So 2017 wasn't that great. It started off all right, jumped 25 in Japan, 28 decent attempts, then didn't really go anywhere. Started to get pain in my shin, but turned out that was nothing. And then have a rest, get ready for 2018, and now
here we are.
Speaks for itself, yeah.
So, as an athlete, you know, you knew you needed this operation.
Yeah. Well, obviously with the physio.
Yeah.
You know, to support.
But strategically, is that a big thing that athletes go through? So they don't try and get it fixed straight away because it can take you out for a certain amount of time. They hold off.
Possibly, yeah. So, like, say I did it after Beijing.
Yeah.
You never know, you know, how long it's going to heal, how it is going to heal. And with the Olympics coming up that year,
yeah.
Is it that bad that you can, like, that you need surgery now? Or mm-hmm. can you last another year? I didn't get a scan after Beijing. We just kind of kept going. It was okay-ish, you know, jumped 29 in Rio was my season's best that year. But if I was to change, I wouldn't change anything really.
Yeah, I mean,
obviously because of this year, but
yeah,
I would have liked to go better in Rio.
Yeah,
top 8 maybe or something. So I'm not going to, you know, no regrets or anything because now I'm good position for Tokyo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you started off, obviously you were saying Commonwealth Games, that was a bigger focus for you than the actual World Championships the year before, because yeah. it's a home event,
yeah.
obviously,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Going into that, because of maybe you weren't particularly firing on all cylinders for the 2017 season, did you feel any pressure going into it?
No, not really, no. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, to be honest, I wasn't really focusing on anyone else and who was in the Commonwealth, obviously. Leading into Comm Games, I was literally going through each comp, just focusing what I needed to do. And at the time, those comps weren't that great. It was just 20, 24. And doesn't, you know, I knew I was capable of that bigger height. But I was just kind of going through it, and I didn't really feel any pressure at all. We got to Nationals, and I jumped 228. And that kind of gave me that a feeling of, all right, we're good. We can jump here.
Mm-hmm.
Then jumped 26 a comp before Comm Games. Went into Comm Games feeling pretty good. I was a little bit nervous going the qualification. I knew like there were some good people there, high caliber. But just went through qualifying pretty easy. And after the first jump in qualifying, I kind of
yeah
the nerves went and I was sweet, good to go. And then from then yeah. It went well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So lining up for the final, going yeah. in there, were yeah. you like, was it the gold? Was that it? Was that all you wanted?
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, walking into the final, body felt good. Just kind of rolling off the qualification because that was really good. I was obviously you want to go for gold, but at the time it's just do what you need to do.
Yeah,
you know, you focus on high jumping,
mm-hmm.
And if you focus on that, then the results will come really. So before the comp, I did a warm up jump at 220 and bruised my heel.
Oh wow!
So I went through the whole comp, pretty much my focus on my heel and doing every jump one time, like focusing on that jump and that jump only, and then you know clear it or miss it. You got to move on to the next one. After each height, I was retaping my heel to
really
yeah.
To so hopefully. you were skipping heights when you just no, you were only doing it once.
Sorry. No. Like in my head, I wasn't focusing on like
okay,
anyone else, or all right, I need to jump this to be in the lead or anything like that. I was kind of focusing on my heel and if that was all right. And yeah, just tape it, retape it. It would hurt, like gradually kind of get worse. But I think the adrenaline masks that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just keep taping it and just keep jumping. Was jumping obviously all right. The 32, I think the crowd really helped for that one because that was the loudest I've ever competed in.
Yeah.
I think the whole stadium was behind me there. So.
Was that PB?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 31 since 2015. That was my PB. 32 was... I got that and that went into the lead with two other athletes still going. So I sat down and I was still retaping my heel, just focusing on that whilst also kind of looking at the other athletes. But
I was going to say, how much do you pay much attention to anybody else?
That comp, no, because...
You're just so bothered about your heel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was just like, all right, tape it, make sure it's okay, put the shoe back on. Oh, all right, I'm up, I need to go again, sort of thing.
Yeah.
I had two training partners in the final from Malaysia. So they're in the final. So... It's kind of talking to them here and there.
I was going to say, do you talk much during the competition?
So, a little bit. That competition, I was pretty focused on like my heel and just jumping. So I didn't really speak to many really at all.
Yeah. Is there ever any mind games or anything like that that you think goes on?
Not really for me, no. I like to keep things pretty friendly.
Do you get it from to other people?
Not in high jump, not really. No. We're all pretty.
You hear stories about the sprinters in the call room.
No, so, we're all pretty good. We all like to have a good laugh and a good chat. So we're all pretty good, I think.
Good. Okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah. So obviously, you went on to win that competition, mm-hmm. which kind of skyrocketed.
Yeah.
I mean, Australia had an amazing
as
well.
Yeah, we went awesome. Yeah.
And then. For you had an amazing season, and I think for Australians, because the Commonwealth Games they're so early, they were in April this year,
mm-hmm.
and then you went right the way through to September.
Mm-hmm.
How did you maintain your form?
I have no idea. I've never done competition season for that long.
Yeah,
never ever. I never had to kind of peak so early. And then keep going. It's mm-hmm. It's usually your major champs towards the end of the year, and that's get ready for that, and then that's it. Have a break. So it was a bit of a challenge. We went to Japan again for the fifth time or so in the year, in a row. I jumped 25 and 28.
Okay.
Which was my best Japanese season ever.
Okay.
I hadn't really pushed the 230s for whatever reason. I don't know. But then, so it was Australia, Japan, back home, then to Europe. The first two comps were a bit iffy, the 220 and 220. One of them for Oslo, I had to shorten my run-up, because my run-up's really long. I don't know if that's a sign.
What, you had to shorten it because
there was enough room? Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because literally there was, like, the bags were on the grass. And then there's the barrier, because the barrier was like right on.
It's quite an intimate stadium.
Lane 8, that one. Good stadium, but
yeah.
Maybe I just need to shorten my run up. So the first two were not so great,
mm-hmm.
but from then on it was pretty good.
And then talk to me about the final, because
yeah.
as you said, you started off the year with a bang and then you entered it.
I would have loved to win Continental Cup.
Yeah.
But the Diamond League, of course, I think that's a little bit more important. Going into that off jumping 236 in Germany,
yeah,
you're in a good position. Mm-hmm. If your body's healthy, you're not too tired, your mind's in probably the best position you can be.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretty friendly with all of them throughout the year. You kind of get to know them a bit better. So it was a really good comp. Crowd was awesome. Stadium's really good. Had to shorten my run up for that one as well.
Really?
Yeah.
And he still won.
Yeah. So maybe it's a sign, right?
Maybe it is a sign.
Yeah. That was tough, actually. That comp was really tough. I don't think I passed, But it was only because I got one on the first attempt, 233, because there's a German guy, Chibilko, he's pretty nice, good friends with him. He jumped 33 as well, and we both missed 35. But, you know, there was two other guys that jumped 230, Tambiri and Donald Thomas. So it was a tough comp.
Yeah. Did you expect, like, at the start of the year to have done the Commonwealth Games and then
No.
Yeah.
I mean, as bad as it sounds, no, I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Because I thought Barsham would be there. And
yeah.
You know, you got to be in it to win it, and you have to...
Totally.
You know, you have to actually compete. You know, anything can happen on the day. So you're not always backing him to win, but he's a very good competitor, and he's, you know, known to jump high. So I thought he would be there throughout the whole year. Unfortunately, he was injured, which kind of opened the door for someone else.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
And here we are. Anyway, yeah. Got the World Championships. I take it you're going to look at it in a new light this time, perhaps.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Any big major goals for Doha?
Win. Yeah.
Good.
You know, like, why aim for anything less?
Yeah, exactly.
Coming off the year I had, I don't see why I should aim for anything less.
Any height in particular?
For Doha, not really. It's literally...
Just the competition.
Win. Yeah. I think that goes for most majors.
Yeah.
You know, if you jump 230 and win the Olympics, doesn't really matter. Yeah. Exactly. So, for the year, though, I think... Because I'm equal Australian record now, you know, to push 37 would be really nice, just to be there by myself. But to be competitive over 230 consistently, that would be ideal.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, best of luck for next year.
Thank you.
And thanks very much.
Cheers. Awesome.
Okay, so sadly, that is all we have time for on this month's episode of the IAAF podcast. But Michelle, thank you as ever for joining me. Tell the lovely people where they can find you on social media.
You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media at Michelle Samed. That's with 2 L and 2 M's. And yeah.
One T.
That's, very important as well. No R as well.
No R. and then you can find me at _BenHarlow on Twitter. As always as well, you can follow us on all of our social media accounts. It's at IAAF.org on Twitter, at IAAF_athletics on Instagram, and the World Athletics Club on Facebook. Please do leave us comments, rate and review on iTunes and all the other places that you listen to this lovely podcast. And I can't wait to record another episode for you guys. So we'll see you very soon.
Bye.
Bye.